briefs and three of which are being argued. I will just note for the record the three argued cases. The first one is number 05-3218, Frederick versus Office of Personnel Management. The second submitted case is number 06-3068, Archibald versus the Department of the Air Force. And the third submitted case is number 06-5033, Kaysand versus the United States. Again, those three cases are submitted on the briefs. The first of the three argued cases today is number 05-1449, Crown Poly versus Unistar Plastics. Mr. Goldberg?
Yes,
just want to confirm you've reserved 3 minutes of rebuttal time.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, you can start in. Oh, excuse me. Before you start, there's one note of business that I should take care of. There was a motion to strike that was filed in this case by Unistar Plastics. The panel is conferred, and that motion is denied.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So you can start whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Lee Goldberg, and I represent Crown Poly in this appeal. We're here today because I'm going to fully explain to this court how the court below erred in construing the guide means and threading means elements of Claim 1 of the 168 patent. Turning to the guide means element of the claim, this is a means plus function claim under Section 35 U.S.C., Section 112, Paragraph 6. And as you know, the purpose or the first thing that one does in interpreting such a claim is to look at the function and determine what the function is. And the parties agree that the function of the guide means is for guiding the plastic bags along a substantially confined path defining a first axis from the wound roll toward the separating means. Now, when the court looked at that function, it interpreted it to mean to create a way for the bags to travel in a straight line.
Can I ask you a question just about that language that
Yes.
you just pointed out?
Mm-hmm.
That language was, I gather, added in an examiner's amendment?
That's correct, Your Honor.
What was the... I could not find the original application language to which that language was added. What did the original application claim language say?
There was no original claim. Language did not have the substantially confined path.
Well, it must have had some reference to first axis, however, right?
It actually was added, Your Honor, that said substantially confined path defining a first axis.
Well, okay. What did the guide means limitation say in the prior... in the original application?
When it was originally filed, it said guide means located on said container upstream of said separating means.
Period?
For guiding the plastic bags.
Period?
And yes.
Comma and?
And that was it.
Well then, there's a reference in the threading means to a second axis.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
There's a reference in the threading means limitation to a second axis.
That was also added by amendment, Your Honor, during that time. If you notice in the notice, I believe when the language has been added, and I will get you that on my rebuttal time, the exact pages, you will note that...
I don't think it's in the appendix, but I didn't... I looked pretty hard, and I didn't see it. It may be in there, but if it is, I missed it.
I'll point it out to the court on my rebuttal time, but that was added... at approximately the same time during the prosecution.
All right.
Going back to the way the court interpreted the function, it stated in a straight line from the roll to the separating means. And then it went as so far to say with that way being closed to a large extent. Now, if you look at the actual limitation of that function, it says... for guiding plastic bags along a substantially confined path. And this is where the very important language that has been fought about comes into play. Defining a first axis from the wound roll toward the separating means. Now, the question is, what is a substantially confined path? if you go a little bit further, it's the words of the claim that define what the substantially confined path is. It's defined a first axis. Now, remember from our days in geometry, the first axis was the x-axis. In this case, that's what it appears. It's generally horizontal direction. And it goes from the wound roll toward, in the direction of. So what does that substantially confined path define? That's what it confines. It confines the path from the wound roll toward the separating means, which is the tongue. It doesn't have anything to do with this portion of the patent, which my adversary will surely point to. This is where the narrow portion of the structure...
You're referring, Mr. Goldberg, for the record, to figure 3 of the patent drawings, the 168 patent, items 35, 34?
Yes, Your Honor. For the record, this is the first embodiment of some of the figures of the first embodiment. And when you look at the first embodiment of the structure that performs this particular function, that path, in the first embodiment, it is a guide plate surrounding a guide slot that extends forward, outwardly, from the device. But notice that the second embodiment of the patent does not have that extension. Now, I just want to be clear to the court how this embodiment works. I have the wound roll in my hand.
This embodiment being this embodiment in figure 6.
Figure 6, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Figure 6, which is the second embodiment. If you will, I would put a bag. I have a bag for the roll of bags for the record, and I would put them almost behind the figure. And if I had a knife, I would cut a hole somewhere above number 36 prime. And so the bag would come through there, and then the bag would come down the what we will talk about the threading means, and then go into the guiding means and come out towards the tongue 44 prime. Note in the second embodiment, again...
Are you saying that the path is what needs to be confined?
Exactly, Your Honor.
And the path is merely the course through space or anything else that is followed by the web?
Exactly, because now, it says along a first axis.
All right, now, if that's so, then wouldn't figure 6 work equally well if instead of a slot... it was simply a bar, and the web went under the bar?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you would think that would be a substantially confined path?
Yes, and I'll tell you why, Your Honor. Because when you look at the prior art that's stated on the front cover of the patent, and this was exhibit 24 Simhai, it is the commercial embodiment of the patents that are discussed on the front cover of the patent.
So you think Daniels has a substantially confined path for Daniels' prior art, right? Because that has a bar.
That has a bar.
And does that have a substantially confined path?
Not along... That has... Was that... I don't know. Daniels did a lot of different patents, Your Honor. I just want to be clear talking about the same
thing. Well, it's the Daniels patent that's included in the joint appendix. Let me get the page. I think it's 908 or something like that. 808.
That has a substantially confined path, Your Honor, but it doesn't go in a first axis. Now, when you look at the Unistar device, or when Unistar will state that figure 6 does not even exist. It said it was withdrawn during the prosecution history. That simply isn't correct. If you look at the file history, the examiner said that if claim 1 is generic to both embodiments, then the restriction requirement is no longer applicable. When confronted with that evidence, Unistar says that figure 6, the second embodiment, does not have a guide structure, a guide means to guide the bags from the wound roll in the direction of the separating wounds. That just isn't correct. If you look at the patent itself, where it discusses figure 6 through 9, it talks about that this has to do with the, and I can point your attention to column 6, lines 31 through 33, where it states that alternate embodiments of the present invention without departing from the spirit of the invention, and talks about figure 6 through 9.
Well, now, on this point, the reference to the claim 1 appears to be generic is at 1177, and that was when in an office action, I don't have the exact date, but it was an earlier office action, and then later, the examiner's amendment that we talked about earlier was put in. Mm-hmm. Now, the claim 1, therefore, was changed.
Correct.
So it was no longer as broad, presumably, and the way you've explained it, it appears it wasn't indeed as broad as it was previously. And apparently, in light of that change, the examiner then regarded claims 1 through 23, which included 1 and all the dependent claims 2 through 22, through 23, as being now
allowed. Correct.
So it doesn't seem to me obvious that the restriction that was imposed with respect to figs 1 through 5 and fig 6 is necessarily lifted.
I'll give you other evidence that supports that.
Not the figs, surely, because the figs were just replaced because of the poor drafting problem.
After the examiner issued a notice of allowance, 2 months later, the applicant submitted figs, formal drawings.
Well, but that was in response to the direction that the drafting problem, right?
If he didn't include figure 6 in that patent, then he was under an obligation not to accept those formal drawings under the MPEP.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He accepted those formal drawings. That is clear evidence, Your Honor, that figure 6 is included in the patent.
Well, frequently specifications extend beyond the claims when the claims have been amended to be narrowed. So I don't see that the fact that figure 6 is still in the patent necessarily tells us that it is within the scope of the narrowed claims.
Some other evidence, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Claims 7 and 8 are specifically directed to the second embodiment, and they depend from claim 1, the only independent claim in the patent. Is it okay if I move on?
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm. Your Honor, I'd like to quickly move on to the threading means portion of the, and then reserve a couple minutes of my time. And that is that when you look at the two embodiments, when I show the... figures 3 through 5, which is the front view of the first embodiment, you can see the opposing protrusions, which are diagonals, labeled as 36 up here. And they have, the patent is very clear that they include rounded apexes. When you look at the second embodiment depicted by figure 6, which I'm showing to the court now, you also see the threading means, which is 36 prime, also rounded portion, which threads the bags into the guide slot. I submit, as Bunzel's expert, their co-defendant, admitted during his deposition, and we have submitted this in a video to the court, that this rounded edge is a and these rounded apexes are substantially the same, equivalent to this Unistar device portion of these rounded apexes that I'm pointing to here. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the 2 minutes for my rebuttal.
Well, we'll give you your full, you went over a little bit, but we'll give you your full 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. So,
we'll hear from Unistar, Mr. Franken.
The original claims, before you get going, the original claims don't appear to be in the appendix, are they?
I have not found them in the appendix, that's correct.
All right, do you have them?
Not with me, no.
Okay. Because if no one has them, I'd like the parties to provide them to us if they were part of the record. Do you know if they were part of the original record in the case?
Sorry.
Were they part of the record in the district court, the original claims, the original application claims?
Yes, Your Honor. The full prosecution history was part of the record.
All right. Well, then in that case.
Yes, I would ask that those, we agree, those could be provided within the next, they could be found within the next 2 days.
If neither party has them here.
I don't have them.
Okay.
So we'll work together and get them to the Federal Circuit.
Yeah, if we could have those by the close of business on Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Your Honors, may it please the Court, I'm Darren Franklin of Shepherd, Mullen, Richter & Hampton for Appellee Unistar Plastics, LLC. The District Court got it right. The structure corresponding to the threading means in Claim 1 is a sloped threading slide that works as a funnel by creating funneling forces. And how do we know that? Because looking at figures 3 through 5 and looking at the specification says that the upper surfaces of these triangular portions 38 are the threading means or threading side 36. And 36 is labeled here at the top. And we know that these slides, just reading the specification, are the threading means.
It seems to me that your case, it may not depend on keeping figure 6 out of the patent in effect, but it certainly is aided by keeping figure 6 out of the patent. The prosecution history, frankly, each of you has a version of it, and I found the prosecution history difficult to reconcile with either version. It mm-hmm. seemed to me, it left me sort of up in the air. Why is it that we should read figure 6 out of the patent when the one fact that we know is what, however you read what the examiner did or didn't do, figure 6 is sitting there in the patent. Mm-hmm. Why isn't it legitimate to look to figure 6 in trying to find out what the structure is that corresponds to that particular, in this case, the guide means and the threading means?
Well, just because figure 6 remains in the final version of the patent doesn't mean that it was still wasn't the restriction requirement wasn't lifted. And you're right, the prosecution history doesn't state at the end that whether the restriction requirement was or was not lifted. What we do know is that the last statement in the prosecution history was that figure 6 was subject to the restriction requirement and that claims subject to figure 6 were restricted out and withdrawn.
Except with respect to that issue, and this is at 1177, the examiner puts in the caveat that if no generic claim is finally held to be allowable, currently Claim 1 appears to be generic. Mm-hmm. And Claim 1 was allowed, albeit in an amended form.
Yes.
So is your argument the one that I put to your opposing counsel, that by virtue of the amendment, it no longer is generic?
That would appear to be the case. The amendment significantly restricts the scope of Claim 1, limits it to a guide means that substantially confines the path, and we've made arguments as to what that means.
Of course, that depends, I guess, on the fact that we don't know, which is what the language was to begin with.
Yes.
Because we don't know how much it restricted it, because we don't have the place where they started.
Well, we do know what was added, because that is in the record, and the substantially confined path language in the first axis was added in that examiner's amendment.
Well, we're told that there was also a change in the threading means limitation. Is that true? I think your opposing counsel said so. It doesn't appear in the record. It's not there. But he's represented that there was a change adding the second axis language, or at least that was my understanding.
That may be the case. I looked through the record, too, while opposing counsel was making his arguments, and I couldn't find any reference in the joint appendix, so I don't have an answer for you right now.
Okay.
But I guess
we can sort that out when we see the original claim language.
Yes.
All right.
The point I think I'd like to make is that the prosecution history has to serve a public notice function. The notice that the prosecution history gives is that figure 6 is subject to a restriction requirement. Had the applicant wanted to explain that somehow figure 6 was added back in, it could have done so in the prosecution history. And a reasonable competitor looking at this prosecution history would have to conclude that figure 6 has been restricted out. That's what it expressly states in the prosecution history.
Suppose that we disagree with you on that. We think figure 6 is in the case.
Okay.
What remains of your argument with respect to, let's say, in particular, the guide means limitation?
Okay. With respect to the guide means, there's a question, even if figure 6 is added back into the case, whether claim 1 even covers figure 6, because claim 1 requires a guide means that substantially confines the path of the bags. And there's a question...
Well, which claim would cover figure 6 if claim 1 doesn't?
Well, if claim 1 doesn't cover figure 6, then none of the claims would cover
well,
figure 6.
Well, but yes, that's...
yes.
Right, that's the problem. When I say it's been added back in the patent, let's assume that we disagree with you that it is out of the patent, and we further... The implication of that is we believe that figure 6 is within the scope of claim 1. Do you still have an argument available to you that your accused device is outside of claim 1, even if claim 1 incorporates figure 6? You follow the argument. You follow the question.
Yes, assuming that figure 6 hasn't been withdrawn, right, and that claim 1 covers it, which we disagree with, then figure 6 also makes clear that if you pulled up on the bags or loaded the bags so that they unwound from the top, the bags would still stay in the guide slot. They don't pop out. And that is a distinct difference from the Unistar dispenser, where it is easy to move the bags in and out of this open area that Crown Poly claims is our guide slot. And in addition, if you load the bags so that they unwind from the top, you can see that it's almost impossible to keep these bags in the open area that Crown Poly claims is its guide slot.
And that goes to the substantially confined path?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If the bags are easily popped out of the guide means, then the guide means can't be keeping them along a substantially confined path.
You're saying the function would not be met.
That's right. We argue that the Unistar dispenser does not perform the function of substantially confining the path of bags. It just doesn't. You can pull the bags side to side. You can easily move them out of the area that they call as the guide means. In addition, it doesn't have the structure that is disclosed in figures 1 through 5. It certainly does not have the guide plate that sticks out from it. It does not have the very narrow slot. And it does not have the small opening.
Well, it doesn't have to have the literal structure. It can have an equivalent structure.
It can have an equivalent structure under 112 paragraph 6.
Well, that's the paragraph that we're interpreting.
Yes. But it still has to perform...
It has to perform the identical function.
Yes.
And you're saying the function is not identical?
Yes. Yes, that's...
So we could quibble about whether or not the structure was a structural equivalent.
That's right, but if this doesn't perform the function, I think you've got to
assume for purposes of argument that the function of confining, substantially confining on path was met.
Okay. Then we have
You'd have a harder time arguing the structure point, wouldn't you?
Well, then we have to figure out, well, how does it keep the bags along the substantially confined path? And it's really hard to make that argument because of how many different paths the bags can take with the Unistar dispenser.
It seems to me that the thrust of your argument, correct me if this is wrong, is that in the patent, the guide means serves to keep the bags on the path to the separation means, whereas in your device, the customer is the one that keeps the bags on the path from the roll to the separation means, essentially.
Yes, and that's the whole purpose of the Cannon Carroll 168 patent, is to ensure that the bags hit the tongue when the customer is pulling them. That's why they said it was an improvement over the prior dispenser that they showed you, the plastic box one, which didn't have that insurance mechanism to ensure that the customer got it. And because the Unistar dispenser can't ensure that the bags hit the tongue when they're pulled through this open area, it doesn't need the threading means to get the bags into that open area. You don't need a threading means to thread it through an open area that I can easily get my finger or thumb through. And it not only doesn't perform the function of threading, but it doesn't have the structure disclosed in the patent, which is the downward slope threading slides.
Mr. Franklin, what exhibit number is that? There's an exhibit number on the front of that?
Yes, this is exhibit number 292.
Defendant's exhibit 292?
I believe that in Central District of California, plaintiffs and defendants share the exhibit number.
Okay, so it's just Exhibit 292.
Yes.
Okay.
Deposition Exhibit 292. Now, during his argument, we talked about the rounded apexes, and assuming that Figure 6 is in the case and is covered by Claim 1, Figure 6 doesn't have the rounded apexes. So that Figure 6, if it is in the case, only bolsters Unistar's argument that the rounded apexes themselves aren't the threading slide. As you can see, threading slide 36 prime ends at a point here. That's not a rounded apex. In addition, the rounded apexes don't perform a funneling function. They only come into play at the very end of the threading process as described in the 168 patent. There was a claim...
Where does the rounded apex come from?
The rounded apexes is described at column 6, lines 8 to 12. After the bag has slid down the threading slide 36, it states, as the end bag AA1 is continued to be pulled horizontally, the bag will slide around the rounded apex of the side protrusions 38, past the opening 42, and free ends 37 of the guide plate 35 into the guide slot 34.
But that's all as a part of a discussion of figs 1 through 5.
That's
and
right.
So it's no surprise that they talk about rounded apex because that's what figs 1 through 5 have. Fig 6 discussion starts at column 6, line 31, mm-hmm. and starts with the announcement that that fig and its associated figures illustrate alternative embodiments, which, I mean, if you take that language at face value, that's now, you know, full stop, enough discussion of 1 through 5 and apexes and everything else. Start again, fig 6. This is another embodiment, and so it's an entirely different universe that we're talking about here. I don't see how the absence of a rounded apex in Fig 6 helps you there, right?
Well, it helps us there because it makes doubly clear that the rounded apex is not the structure that corresponds to the threading means disclosed in Claim 1. With respect to Figures 1 through 5, at Column 5, lines 33 to 36, the specification specifically refers to threading means or threading slide 36. And with respect to Figure 6, because it doesn't have the rounded apexes, it just makes even more clear that the rounded apex itself isn't the threading slide. It is those downward angled or downward sloped surfaces that extend over most of the bag width. And with the Unistar dispenser, we just don't have that. For most of the bag width, we have these horizontal wires with a large opening in between. These horizontal wires are not funnel shaped. They do not have a funneling purpose. They do not create transverse forces. And in any event, since this hole is so big here, you don't need to do a threading function. I can move quickly on to the panel section.
I have to say, I'm not sure I follow you there.
Okay.
That hole is smaller than the slot below the hole.
Yes.
Right. So even though the threading may be inefficient, inefficient may not be the right word, but it may not be fully effective to keep the bags in the slot, it nonetheless produces a situation in which if you pull the bag and it goes down into the slot, there will be some resistance to going up, more than if those arced pieces of metal were not there, correct?
Some resistance may be, but Claim 1 requires a substantially confined path.
Well,
and if it's easy to move the bags out...
Well, that understood, but with respect to threading, I'm not sure I see why that isn't a threading means. I can see the guide means argument with respect to substantial confinement, but I'm having a harder time with threading.
What's the exact function of the threading means?
The exact function of the threading means, the parties agree, is that as stated expressly in Claim 1, which is to, for threading the plastic bags from the wound roll received in said container into said guide means along a second axis generally transverse to the first axis. And both parties agree that that's the threading function.
I mean, that doesn't require any kind of narrow or confined or a restricted area, it seems to me. I just think you have a tougher row to hoe on that limitation because that looks to me as if it's a threading means within the language of the limitation.
Well, we the ordinary meaning of threading, it suggests a small hole. You thread yarn through a small hole in the needle. If I took the ball of yarn and tossed it through the door, we wouldn't say I threaded the door. The door is a large opening. The same applies to the Unistar dispenser. But even assuming that the Unistar dispenser has a threading function, it doesn't have the structure that corresponds to that which is disclosed in the patent, which is the downward slope slide. And it doesn't have any equivalent structure, because the structure that's disclosed in the patent works through transverse forces that start to bunch up the bags as the bags fall down the threading slide and automatically fall down the threading slide through the hole into the guide means. We just don't have any structure that performs in an equivalent way.
So you don't think the top side of the arcuate wire structure there that is being referred to as the alleged threading means, you don't even think that's an equivalent of that arcuate shape on Fig 6?
No. In fact, the part that they say is the rounded apex Yeah, that goes down. Arc that's shown in Figure 6 actually goes the other way.
No, I'm looking at the 36 prime, which goes down.
Yes, and it ends at a point.
Right. So if you mean, is your whole argument that that's more of a point and it's not rounded off, and if you took a file and you rounded that off by a couple of millimeters, it would no longer be equivalent to the threading means?
Well, our argument is that the whole 36 prime is the corresponding structure.
Right.
Figure 6 is in the complaint. And this goes over pretty much the whole bag width. So most of the bag is being subject to the transverse forces created by 36 prime. That's not the case with these rounded apexes
on
the Unistar dispenser.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Franco. Mr. Goldberg, you have your rebuttal.
Your Honors, what Mr. Franklin did was exactly what the court did when it erred in construing the function of the guide means. It's the way I started out. He stated that because this portion of the guide means you were able to lift the bag up, therefore it wasn't substantially confined. And my point to this court was, when I first started out, was that is not the function of the guide means. The guide means is to guide the plastic bags along a substantially confined path. This is not a path. In Unistar's brief, it talks about a path having length. This does not have length. The path is the first axis from the wound roll toward the separating means. That's the structure. And Bunzel's expert agreed about that. I put my business card on the lower portion of the Unistar dispenser, and I put it toward the separating means. And I asked him, is that a path that guides the bags from the wound roll towards the separating mean? He agreed. That's the substantially confined path. Whether the bag can pop out or not is not a question in the substantially confined path area. I just want that to be very clear, because that's what the court below did, and that's how it erred. Judge Clevenger put it right. My adversary speaks of the embodiments, but never mentions the equivalent structures. It's easier shown on the demonstrative exhibit with the color coding. Judge Bryson said that, you know, this green depicted area clearly is the structure. It confines the bags to a certain extent. The upper portion of the with this coated in yellow is clearly the threading means. Unit Bunzel's
Well, expert. Wasn't didn't you just sort of say it all right there? Confines to a certain extent, and the judge decided it didn't confine to enough extent.
No, because with all due respect, Your Honor, this is the path. It could be this bar. It doesn't have to be these portions, the upper portions of this. It is the path that defines. The key word here is defines. Substantially confined path defines a first axis. That's what it's saying. From the wound roll toward the separating means. That's what confines the path.
Of course, if I'm a customer and I just lift the bags up, I'm free to do that. There's no restriction on the extent to which I do that.
Absolutely.
And suddenly there's no longer a confined path.
With all due respect, Your Honor, he can move it, but the purpose of this patent was that if you use the first axis, or you take the first axis from the wound roll toward the separating beam, those are the confining portions of it.
That's the purpose of the patent. The question is, does the accused device practice that?
It practices. No device, ensure, what you're talking about Claim 19 now.
No, Claim 19, I've read the argument on Claim 19, and that uses the term horizontal, which I...
But the word,
it seemed to me the district judge had that right. Horizontal as opposed to angled in one direction or angled in another direction.
But the insurer...
I don't think that helps.
I just have 2 points to make on that. I understand my time is up, but I'll just make 2 quick points for you. One is, the insured of the specification and of Claim 19 is contrary to the canons of claim construction if you put that term in there. It's clearly not in the words of the claim. The second thing, the point I make to you, in reality, Your Honor, do you think that somebody walks into the supermarket, Unistar's distributor, and says, here's my dispenser, goes with my bags, only my bags, and it doesn't work. It doesn't go towards a separating beam. What I want the customer to do is pull up. That's not what happens. These were designed for the purpose of this area, the yellow area, to thread the bags into the guiding beams for the function of going towards the separating beams.
But the issue isn't whether it works or not. The issue is whether, in order to work, it needs to practice all the limitations of your claim. And that seems to me a rather different question. What they're saying, in so many words, is ours works just fine, and we don't have to put in all the structure that you've recited.
In order, if there is a way for it not to work, that doesn't mean it doesn't infringe. It means it infringes poorly. And if poorly infringing still infringes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Goldberg. The case is submitted. The second case in which we'll hear